to the one of the most difficult questions that the Rabbanim had before Yom Kippur is the question of a woman who's pregnant. And even though it's mefurish, and this is how we pass it, it's mefurish in Shulchan Aruch that muboros, that pregnant women mashlimos, they complete the fast. And the reason why it became difficult is because there was one of the Gedolei Yerushalayim, Rav Yaakov Yisrael Fisher, one of the poskim of the Ein HaCharedus. He used to be the Rav in Zichron, in the heart of Gula. He was one of the Tzaddiki Yerushalayim. He wrote several svarim. He wrote a sefer of Tshuvas, and he wrote a sefer on Rambam. He used to have hours every day. People used to come, I think, between 1 and 2 o'clock. He used to line up to ask him shailos. So he dropped a bomb in a haskama that he gave to a sefer. I believe it was the first volume of the Pnei Baruch. Right, the Pnei Baruch is the very popular sefer in Hilchas Avelos. Pnei Baruch is the sefer that Art Scroll translated in Hilchas Avelos. So Pnei Baruch had before it came out in Avelos, he had a volume, a very small volume, on Bikur Cholim, and the halachis of Aninus. So in his haskama, in Rav Yaakov Yisrael Fisher's haskama to that sefer, so he writes that the kayoyim azeh nechel shu adoros, people have gotten weaker nowadays, vaseros raboshal noshim apilas oylei atainas, and scores of women lose their pregnancies as a result of the fast. And therefore, tzrichin kol anoshim hamulbaris adachodesh atshi lechol b'yom kippur and pochus mikishir. And therefore, all women who are pregnant have to eat pochus mikishir up till the ninth month. This psak of Yaakov Fisher was resoundingly criticized by all other Gedolei Yisrael that I'm aware of that addressed it. Rabbi Waldenberg criticized it very strongly. Rabbi Moshe, I believe, Paskin differently. Yerushalmi Zalman was very upset by it when they showed him this psak. And Rav Yoshev, when he was asked about this by the Lev Avram, was very upset by it. I believe Rabbi Yosef was very upset by it. So Rav Waldenberg has a tshuva where he discusses it in Chelik Yud Zayin Simen Chof. And he writes that hine zukula gedor lad ma'od, to be matir beheter kloli, in general terms, to let the pregnant woman fast. And he looks at the comment of, even though it's a comment, it's really an unfair psak, it's not a tshuva, it's just a part of a letter. So he nevertheless he analyzes the each aspect of what Rav Yaakov Yisrael Fisher seems to be saying. First of all, he writes that the times have changed. Nechlushu adoros, and that's part number one. He says that the things are different. Shulchan Aruch says all the way from Zeman HaGemara to Shulchan Aruch, it says that women are muboris u'minikus mashlimais. And then he argues that scores of women have been mapil, have lost the pregnancy. And then he goes as far as to say that therefore women are mechuyavos to eat. So on each of these three points, Rabbi Waldenberg questions it very, very seriously. He says that, first of all, is it really true that scores of women are mapil? Simply not true. Simply not true. It's conceivable that scores of women over centuries were mapil. Scores of women over a huge number of Yemei Kippur. Maybe that's correct. But Rav Waldenberg says, even if that would be correct, it would still be a miyuta de miyuta. It would be a very, very small minority that would be mapil as a result of the tainus. And therefore he says that even though there is a principle that in Hochen Besofek Bikuach Nefesh, in Hochen Bikuach Nefesh Acha Haroiv, but there still has to be some basis for the Sofek. And Rav Waldenberg argues that we just don't have a basis for this kind of Sofek. L'moshel, Even in the time of Chazal, so maybe there was a suffix rochek that a woman who's a muberes would lose the baby, but Chazal suggests me mashlam. There is a suffix rochek that any muberes could dehydrate. We don't have a halacha that the moment a woman becomes pregnant, she has to stay home. We say she's allowed to function normally. So why do we allow a pregnant woman to function normally? Why don't we tell every pregnant woman, al pi din? She has to quit her job and quit her work and stay home. Because we're not worried about, there has to be a certain level of suffix, a certain level which comes to the point where we say, now we have a significant suffix, about which we apply the rule of suffix nefoshois lekula, of suffix pikuach nefesh lekula. There is a tshuva, I believe, by the Maramshik, that says that in order to reach the point of a suffix, you have to have a suffix of 1 in 1,000. So I don't know if we would follow that rule nowadays, because in the time of the Maramshik, there's just an aside. Or I have to think about this. In the time of the Maramshik, when you amassed enough information to be able to have 1 in 1,000, that was a very, very large number. Nowadays, 1 in 1,000 is not such a large number. If somebody would tell you that this procedure has a mortality rate of 1 in 1,000, and then you would not do that, right? Mm-hmm. So, in other words, we work with much larger numbers. So for us, 1 in 1,000 is a very significant suffix. In the Maram Shik's time, 1 in 1,000 meant that you have to have so much information, spoken to so many people. It was the nature of collecting statistics, and the numbers they had then were such that 1 in 1,000 was suffix rochik, because it represented a much larger, much more information. Nowadays, 1 in 1,000 is a few studies on the computer. You figure out what so probably we would have a measure of a suffix which is more significant than 1 in 1,000 to be called a suffix in the function. I would think Lanius Daiti. That's the way we function. Nevertheless, the chances of a woman losing the baby because of pregnancy, and I would add, when you take away all the women that present with some kind of concern, you take them up and have them eat, so that means that only the women who are having healthy pregnancies without any chashashes. So then what Rav Oldenburg is saying, Rav Oldenburg, by the way, he was nifted relatively recently. Rav Oldenburg was one of the great poskim of Yerushalayim. Rav Oldenburg was a Talmud, I believe, of Rav Kook, who was certainly in the Chabura in the 30s. I believe it was in the 30s. Rav Herzog, maybe it was later. No, it must have been later. In the 50s, I think. Rav Herzog Zatzal, when he was chief rabbi of Eretz Yisrael, so he gathered together a Chabura of young Turks, of the promising Talmidei Chacham of Yerushalayim. And he gathered them together, and he had a Beis HaMedrash. And with those young minds, he used to refer Shalas. Herzog was like Goyen Olam, that's how Goyen Olam, you understand how Goyen Olam works. So he was a Goyen Olam, but he was also a man of just a great, great measure. So he didn't, when he had very difficult Shalas, certainly Shalas that pertained to the establishment of the Rabbanut and the Rabbanut system, so we had this tremendous Beis HaMedrash. Who was in the Beis HaMedrash? So Rav Yoshe was there, and Rav Shlomo Zalman, and Rav Ani Yosef, and Rav Shalom Zolti, and Rav Mishai Goldschmidt. There were more. I don't remember all the names. So you can imagine what kind of a Beis HaMedrash that was. Rav Yoshe at one point did not want to be part of the Beis HaMedrash because ever since he was a young man, he was a loner. He always learned better alone. But they wanted him very much, so he was mitzvah to the Beis HaMedrash sometimes. And the Rav Yoshev and Rav Zolti, they sat together and prepared the protocols for the Dayanim in Yerushalayim, for the Dayanut of the Rav Roshis to go to Bnei Brak once a week, because at that time they didn't have libraries like they have right now. And there was one old Rav in Bnei Brak that had a wonderful library, and they would travel together once a week and sit in his library and prepare the protocols that are used all under the ages of Rav Herzog. So Rav Herzog was the one who really discovered all of these people who became Gedolei Yisrael afterward. So Rav Oldenburg was then that Chabur as well. And Rav Oldenburg became one of the Dayanim of Eretz Yisrael, the Dayanut system, and he also became one of the experts, if not the expert, for many, many years, for decades, on medical issues, because he was for a long time the Rav of Shaarei Tzedek. After Shlomo Zalman stepped down, Shlomo Zalman was the Rav of Shaarei Tzedek for a short period of time. This is the old Shaarei Tzedek when it was in Rehov Yafo. So then, and the building is still there, I think it's being taken apart now. So then Rav Waldenberg became the Rav of Shaarei Tzedek, and he gave a shiur to the old German trained doctors at Shaarei Tzedek, and that became a very important chibur called the Ramat Rachel, which is maybe a different name, a kuntres, in the 8th volume of the Tzitz Eliezer. And so when he weighed in on this issue, that is a very, very significant, if not the most significant, contribution to this sugya. So that was the first point that he made. He said that even given the numbers of Rav Fisher, which he doubts if the numbers are correct, and if the numbers are correct, then miyodea over how many years the numbers were amassed, and if that's the case, how many pregnancies, Baruch Hashem, during those years, women fasted and came to a very successful conclusion, healthy conclusion. So he says that he doubts the numbers, but given the numbers, he thinks it still is such a small chashash, a chashash that we do not generally follow in Allah, and certainly a chashash that would not be allowed to be matir nisa deraisa, and nisa chomer like eating on Yom Kippur. In addition to this ha'ora of Rav Waldenberg, we should add that our own Rabbi Bleich also wrote a very critical review, critical in both sense of the term, of Rav Fisher's Psak, and he published it in Contemporary Halacha, Volume 4. And there Rabbi Bleich puts together, or points out, that at that time there were three studies that were done. The one which raised some concern together with Rav Fisher's Psak was earlier. This was in 83, that they did a study in Shaarei Tzedek to see if there was an increase in women coming into the hospital to give birth on Matzoh Yom Kippur. So it was reported that there was a slight increase of women coming to the reporting to give birth Motzoi Yom Kippur, but that slight increase was women who had come to term already, so there wasn't an additional risk that was given to that pregnancy. And then there was a similar study had been published already in another journal in 82. Was published in Rifuan, and 83 was published in JAMA, the Journal of American Medical Association. And then the Lancet in 82. Lancet is a very prestigious medical journal. It was, I assume it still is. The Lancet and New England are the two most, unless things have changed in the last decade or so. So the Lancet published a chashash, not of the pregnancy not concluding to term, but perhaps there was a chashash, perhaps, of the baby not developing as well if it went through a day of starvation. So that was those. So Rav Bleich points out that those studies, which are often quoted by gynecologists today, are often quoted blindly. They did not really read the studies, because they'll quote the study that the Shaarei Tzedek study shows the women there was increase, but if I remember correctly, but I defer to Rabbi Bleich, there was an increase in 8th month pregnancies, but I defer to Rabbi Bleich's report that was only an increase in those who actually come to term. After Rabbi Bleich's article, there were several studies done in Ramadan population in pediatric journals, which also did not show an increase in women having bad conclusions to their pregnancy as a result of the Ramadan fasts. Now, Ramadan fasts are not as severe as Yom Kippur, because they can eat at night. But nevertheless, that's what we have to work with. So the science also does not seem to support the conclusion of Rav Fisher. Then Rav Waldenberg, this is Ha'ora number one. Ha'ora number two is that Rav Fisher discusses that Nishtanu HaTzvon, basically. He's saying the times have changed. So Rav Oldenburg raised the question as to, number one, is it really factually correct? Is it Nechlashu Adoros? Do we say, even though you'll often find in Tshuvas that people, that we assume people are weaker right now, for example, the Tshuvas about Chinuch, that nowadays we are more makel on kids during the time of Chinuch and fasting and not, even though the science says for carrots, science says that we are better, that our nutrition is better right now. Very often we find that women have periods during nursing, which in Bizmana Gemara was not common. And it's doctors say because our nutrition is better right now. So, but nevertheless, number one, do the facts really support the idea that pregnancies are more difficult now than they used to be? And then he says, Rav Oldenburg says, and in order to make the statement that nishtanu atzvam, and that as a result we're going to change the halacha, so Rav Oldenburg says you need a very high bar for that. To be just to have a hashara, to have an estimate that it seems to me that things have changed. He says that doesn't satisfy the standard of nishtanu atvoim that would allow us to change alochem ufereshus in shas and in shulchan aruch. So those are the comment number one. He says that he just can't accept that he says Rav Fisher went so far as to say that tzrichin kol anoshim. He thinks that was a terrible mistake. And as we said, that's now why is this a difficult for a Rav? Because nowadays there are many gynecologists who are very concerned about women fasting. And Rav Blach is of the impression that their concern is more out of a malpractice suit than it is out of concern that this is really medically indicated. In other words, there's no reason for a doctor to tell a woman you can fast. It doesn't do anything for him. Right? But telling him not to fast means he's on safe turf. Right? Now again, some doctors will quote these studies, but will quote them not entirely accurately. So it puts the Rav in a very, very difficult position if a gynecologist is advocating that a woman should not fast, and we think that halacha is otherwise. So that's why that becomes a lot of the yisaskos, a lot of the Schwartz will be spending hours and hours, if he hasn't already spent hours and hours on the phone. He's brought from a young community. So hours and hours on the phone discussing with women and calling up the doctors to make sure that the women understand the doctors correctly, and pressing the gynecologist, pressing the doctor to say that, to point out that we can only be make of sekundas nefashas, that it really has to be borne out by studies, that we cannot. And sometimes doctors will welcome the rabbi's phone call because that shifts the achrayas. In other words, the doctor said, I said what I had to say. He said, what do you have to say now? Right? So doctors will be happy and be comfortable with that. And then, but again, it's many rabbanim daven very, very hard over Yom Kippur, that all the women that they said have to fast, that they should have easy pregnancies and successful pregnancies. Now, there is another ha'ara that Rav Fisher was criticized, because at the end he says, well, until the ninth month, they should not eat. But in the ninth month, that's when they should fast. And Rav Nebensal, he thought the prunk for carrot. He thought that the ninth month, that is when there's greater concern, rather than until the ninth month. Pirush Advarim is the following. What I would understand is the following, that when a woman is, when it's come to full term, so then if she goes into labor, it's fine. That's when she should, 40 weeks, 39 weeks, she can go into labor. A little bit earlier is very precarious because the lungs of the fetus are not fully formed. So that is a very precarious time. But in the very end of term, so then she can go into labor. However, once a woman does go into labor, so then the doctors point out that to go into labor in a weakened state, so that could be dangerous for the mother and dangerous for the birthing. So that's why once a woman does go into labor, she becomes a cholish b'sakana. So once there's a reason to believe that she's heading into labor, so to speak, so then I would think that then she can break her fast. So let, if she goes into labor kul nidre night, so then she's fully hydrated, not a problem. If she goes into labor on the other hand mincha time, so then she's going into labor already in a weakened state, and then she should be allowed and she should be encouraged to hydrate herself because she's now becoming a chelish ishva sakana, and that could be dangerous for Lania's daiti. That's what doctors have indicated to me, and that's what Rav Nevin Sal points out as well, that would be a time when she should break her fast. Rav Moshe Sternbach has a tshuva about this as well, and tshuvas van Hoga is chelik beis, simin reish study beis, and there also he disagrees with Rav Fisher and says that only if the woman is in a weakened state to begin with, and that's the lashon of the Tzitz Eliezer as well, halacha lemasa, that lachein ledati borur hadavar. It's clear to me, Waldenberg says, ki ein la seis was a heter both in klali, that when a rov cannot paskin, that all pregnant women should not fast in Yom Kippur. And the yesh la seis haro lehav, everyone should paskin, ki bechol mikra shel chusho yistia mei amatzava normali, that if there is any kind of weakness, it's not a fully healthy pregnancy, or the pregnancy is not, again, what we call a normal pregnancy, then a Rav has to be consulted, and a Rav has to think it out very, very carefully to see whether there are reasons to be makel, and allow this woman to break her fast. So I would think that there are nine situations. There are nine situations in which a woman should, which has to be looked at very, very carefully by a rav together with the doctor to see whether this woman should be allowed to break her fast on Yom Kippur. Number one is, let's say this woman has already had two miscarriages. So if she's had two miscarriages and we don't know the reason for the miscarriages, so that already goes back to one of the Gedolei HaPoskim, the Orchas Chaim, the Sfinker Rav, has in Simon Tov Reish Zion, that if a woman has had two hapolois, and then with the doctor's consent, we would say that she should break the fast b'shiurim. She should have shiurim over the course of the day. We'll discuss shiurim a little bit later in detail. On the other hand, if we know why she had the hapola, if she had the hapola because she was having a terrible fever at that time, or if we know she had the hapola because she had some procedure that was done, so then Fasha said that would not be a reason. Again, I have to discuss everything very, very carefully with the doctor, because sometimes people have a predisposition to hapola, which then is caused by something. But so that has to be discussed with the doctor, whether her past history would indicate that she should not fast during this pregnancy. Number two is if she has a history of preterm labor. The woman has had a pregnancy which ended up in preterm labor, so the doctors have told me that there's a 15% chance that the next pregnancy could also be in preterm labor, and if she's had two children with preterm labor, there's a 32% chance that the next pregnancy will end in preterm labor. So that has to be discussed with the doctor very carefully. I would assume, it's all discussed with the doctor, that she's in her third month of pregnancy. So the fact that she went into labor during the eighth month, so that doesn't really play a role. On the other hand, if she's holding in the eighth month, that's a very serious concern, and maybe even the seventh month. So that's a reason to discuss with the doctor. Preterm labor is a sakana. It's a sakana for the baby. Even though babies do very well nowadays. Baruch Hashem, you probably know stories of babies that were in the fourth month and they pulled through well. But that is with tremendous amount of tipul, tremendous amount of nursing and care. If a baby is born and the lungs are not fully developed, that's a sakana. They'll do well, Baruch Hashem. They'll be in incubators, they'll be on, but that doesn't take them out of the sakana. The fact that we can be metapel with them very well, I don't think in this case means that it's not a sakana. It is a sakana, because Baruch Hu gave us ways of intervening. So that would be the second situation where there's a history of preterm labor, again to be discussed with the doctor, whether the preterm labor of the past is an indication of future performance as well, and whether her present date, her present stage of pregnancy, would indicate that she may go into preterm labor as a result of fasting. What's the mechanics? The mechanics are that we are concerned that the uterus dries up a little bit. If the uterus, it becomes dry, so that's then doctors are afraid that that dryness was an irritation which the pressure of the baby inside could cause a reaction whereby it would begin to have cramping. Number three is if a woman has had early cramping in this pregnancy, right? The first two were previous history. Now we're talking about the pregnancy itself. This pregnancy, if she had some kind of early cramping, so then one has to be concerned. Very often a woman will go into preterm labor and the doctors will put her on bed rest. Or they'll go into preterm labor and the doctors will give her medication, which will stop the cramping. But then she is in a greater risk of the uterus, of the dried uterus causing cramping and causing her to go into labor. And so that would be a reason for her not to go into that kind of risk and to stay hydrated. The fourth situation is that during this pregnancy she's had some kind of staining. Now, there are different kinds of staining that a pregnant woman has. There is staining that happens at the very beginning during the first 12 weeks, and that is usually, everything we're saying right now, we always consult with the doctor, preferably consult with the attending gynecologist, the doctor who's taking care of the woman. A woman can have staining during the first trimester, and that is usually associated with some kind of blood clot that is lying below the placenta, and usually is a hilchus nida issue how we deal with that and the cause of staining. But as far as I understand, doctors don't see that as being something which threatens the pregnancy. On the other hand, staining could be that there is some bleeding that's coming from the placenta, coming from the uterus, and that, God forbid, sometimes is an early sign of a miscarriage, and therefore has to be taken very, very seriously. So if a woman has had staining during this pregnancy and the doctors cannot associate it with something that is unrelated or something that would not cause early labor, not cause distress the pregnancy, so then we have to be very concerned about it. And that might be a reason to say that this woman should not. There's something going on that we don't know. Something happening that we can't figure out. So then that might be a reason to say, well, let's not make this a more complicated situation by allowing her to go into any kind of dehydration. Doctors have told me, I don't have any scientific evidence on this, that there could be a concern that even staining, which is from a fairly benign source, but if a woman is in a weakened position, then there could be a concern that that staining could increase, and that staining could then threaten the pregnancy. Then another concern which would indicate that the pregnancy is a riskier pregnancy if the woman is dehydrated during the pregnancy. It's not uncommon for a pregnant woman to dehydrate. Very often women find out that they are pregnant because they faint, because they collapse. And that usually that's because a pregnant woman is at a greater risk of dehydration. So again, regular pregnancy, that isn't a concern. But if a woman has a history of dehydrating, so then that has to be focused on before. What do I mean by focused on? Well, if a woman gets up in the morning, and every morning she gets up and she is dizzy and faint, and until she eats something and drinks something, so then the chance of her fasting kippur is very, very minimal. Because you see that after having a normal meal the night before, she's already in a dehydrated state. On the other hand, if a woman says, you know, at the end of the day, she has, Baruch Hashem, five kids, and she's doing two jobs, and she's taking care of the house, and at the end of the day she begins to get a little schwach and dehydrated, so then we would say, yeah, but on Yom Kippur, she's going to stay in bed the whole day. So then that would be a discussion again with the doctor, that taking these kinds of precautions, whether that would satisfy our concern. But it has to be addressed. If a woman does have ongoing dizziness or faintness during pregnancy, or she has dehydrated during pregnancy already, so then tzorach l'dun b'zeh. You have to be very careful. I once had a situation, a woman fainted during pregnancy, and it was 2 weeks before Yom Kippur, but the reason why it was a Rosh Hashanah thing. But she fainted because she was davening in a place that was jam-packed, overcrowded. She was mamash a sardine. She said she couldn't breathe. So then I spoke to the doctor, and I think he agreed that that was not an indication that she is at a risk for dehydration. If she's going to put herself in a situation where she's packed like a sardine and it's very, very hot, and there's no air, then yeah. But if she stays home in bed, then she should be okay. So that has to be evaluated. Then then we have to give a woman warning signs for the day of Yom Kippur itself. And those warning signs would be that if she gets lightheaded or faint, that's ochus abulmus, that if she has any kind of staining, God forbid, that if she has any kind of pains, of labor pains, of cramping, of unexpected cramping, or that the cramping becomes very, very strong, even if it's the painless cramping, which is not associated with labor, but some doctors are concerned that that also can become very strong and could terminate and could begin going into real labor, or if the movement of the baby radically would change over the course of the day. So those are all reasons to tell a woman to break her fast. Again, would she break her fast with shiurim, or would she break her fast with without shiurim? So again, I would defer to a doctor, Lanius Daiti. Without any more information, I would say that if she would have some kind of cramping, so then I would say that she should drink without shiurim. If on the other hand, it's another concern that she has, that she feels lightheaded or dizzy, or that she has she just noticed at the very beginning that the movement of the baby is a little bit less, then she can start trying to drink with shiurim, and if things don't change in the course of a half hour, an hour, or less than an hour, then to drink without shiurim. But that is to be a kol fi hamokem uzman. If she realized that the baby hasn't moved the last 4 or 5 hours, so then she should start drinking, and that's strange, and that's difficult, and that's unusual, then she should drink right away if she's having staining. So then she probably should drink without shiurim.
What about the other signs, like very dry mouth or amber car urine?
So doctors indicate to me that very amber urine is a sign of dehydration. I'm very nervous about giving that as a shiur, because I don't know if people really, a person has to be attuned to that. But that is correct. Very amber urine is a sign of dehydration, which would be a reason to break one's fast. And if a pregnant woman, if the hands begin to get clammy, that would be the signs. There could be many signs of dehydration. Sometimes a person gets dehydrated. Sometimes, if you've been hiking, sometimes and you take water with you, you'll see, you can notice that sometimes you'll stiffen up. That a limb will begin to get stiff. They begin to get cramping it. That's a sign of dehydration. So pregnant woman would take all of these, any of these signs, and break their fast right away when any of these things happen. Dehydration also is something that concerns doctors, because one cannot always control dehydration. Dehydration often takes a life of its own. Normally, if you catch it right away and you hydrate yourself, then you're okay. But God forbid, and sometimes dehydration can move at a quick pace, and you can't always catch it in a quid pro quo fashion. So that's why with a pregnant woman, we would say to be very, very alert and very, very attuned to it.
Is there any reason not to have women just start pregnant women that you're at the right risk on IVs, so they can be hydrated intravenous?
Yeah, there are several tshuvas about IVs in general. I believe I can't say with certainty that the Rav did put himself on an IV before Yom Kippur in his later years. And that caused a stir amongst many poskim. Rav Waldenberg, without mentioning the Rav, said he heard about Chacham Echem America, and he was very critical of doing that. And Rav Moshe Zetshuva also, where he's not critical, or he's not, does not encourage that at all. So the Rav probably did it not al pidin. The Rav did it emotionally. The Rav said himself that emotionally, the Rav's Yom Kippur was a different kind of Yom Kippur. For the Rav to not to have a Yom Kippur where he was fasting, where he was in shul davening. So that the Rav, I think, emotionally wanted himself to be in an IV. He didn't feel al pidin was necessary. Rav Aldiger points out that the halacha tells us when a person is mechuyev to eat and when they're not mechuyev to eat. So, as the language of the poskim is shelo lehit chakeim, shouldn't be smarter than the halacha. Halacha says this person is mechuyev to eat, so we shouldn't try to figure out a way in which they. We shouldn't try to figure out to be smarter than halacha. So we should try to shafs up. Is this one mechuyevus or not mechuyevus? So that's the approach of the poskim. Let's call the shots. Let's call the din. And now your question is a good question. Though, is there any downside at all? So one downside is just not doing the Ritzon Hashem. Ritzon Hashem said let her fast. But there is a downside because if an IV slips out, so then everybody's going to get very concerned what to do, and putting an IV in, depending how it slips out, could be an Iser on Yom Tov itself, because to make sure that the IV is in place, you have to draw some blood. So that could be a din of drawing blood. So that's, we're not excited about doing that. And number two, on very, very, very slight occasions, an IV can cause an infection. And if it, God forbid, would cause an infection, so then it's terrible, because then the infection can go in the bloodstream. So whenever a person goes in an IV, that the shikul adas always is that the chances of sepsis are totally minimal, and the toelus is great. For us to now say that we're going to do preventative IVs, so for that, I don't know if a person would. That was the point that the Lev Avram makes, that the Avram is his name, no? Avram, he makes that point that he would not suggest that because of that chashash. I'm sorry? I believe that I can't say with certainty. I don't know. But I believe that was the situation. I believe so.
But so an IV would only be mutter in the case where halachically one doesn't want to eat.
No. An IV is, there's no Easter in putting on Yom Kippur, no Easter putting an IV in. It's not. In other words, intravenous food is not a problem at all. Rav Moshe's a tshuva in Chelek Dalin. Rav Moshe's a tshuva where the question was posed whether a woman was very, very weak on Yom Kippur, and the doctor said that if she puts a suppository in, then she'll be okay. So Rav Moshe also was very discouraging of the suppository. He said, if she's mutter free, let her eat. That's the din. She's not mechuyev to fast. She's not. There's no chiyuv. It's not even a kiman fasting. If a person is chodesh shmosakana, there's no kiman fasting. Then it's also for them to fast. So Rav Moshe is very critical. At the end, Rav Moshe writes, look, there's no downside in putting the suppository in, and she's going to have a lot of aggravation. He raises the question. Here's an interesting question. He says she's not mechuyev to put a suppository in. This is not an IV. He's put an erev yom tov. The suppository put on yom tov. So he said she's not mechuyev to put it in. So maybe there's an iser refuah b'shabbos, refuah b'yom tov to put it in. So he's very discouraged. Then he says, in typical Rav Moshe, well, she's going to get very aggravated by not being able to fast. She's an old European woman, so she's going to get so aggravated that that's going to be mad to the refuah. So that's what we're allowed to put it in. There is a sea change, which is also very difficult. When you become rabbanim, you'll see there's a sea change in the attitude towards Yom Kippur. In other words, when I was younger, certainly my parents' generation would do anything to fast on Yom Kippur. Rabbanim spent more time erev Yom Kippur convincing old European Jews to fast than they did in being makel for people to fast. And pregnant women didn't ask shilas, because their mothers, when they were pregnant, fasted, and they fasted. So it wasn't on the table, machlal. We have a more educated generation nowadays, so people are more aware of a cholish ishbasakana, and that's good, that a cholish ishbasakana, they know that they're supposed to eat. However, it has the attitude towards fasting, and it might be that's better. Might be better. Might be more accurate. Might be just being waxing nostalgic, but it might be better that way. But there is you have to, for the Rav to eat Yom Kippur, was unthinkable. It was an outer space kind of idea. It was science fiction to eat Yom Kippur, right? So, and that was the attitude of European Jews to eat Yom Kippur. So they weren't asking Shilas. The doctor could have told them to fast. They weren't asking Shilas to take pills. They didn't do it. And so now it's the other way around. Now many young women don't have a different attitude, and so probably somewhere between is what the Rebbeinu Shem wants us. The approach that Kadosh Baruch Hu wants us to have. There is a Chasam Sofer. Chasam Sofer writes, and this is he writes as a Dover Poshut. It's just interesting, the Chasam Sofer. There was a time somebody wrote the Chasam Sofer, but I think a cholera epidemic. So the question was that people would go. So the question, the Shoyel says the Chasam Sofer, that if people will go out, then they could become, and they're in a weakened state, then they could become more at risk for the cholera epidemic. So the first Chasam Sofer discusses the heter of eating when a person's in a weakened state with their risk. And then he says, but it sounds like from your question that if they stay at home, they're going to be okay. Then there's no greater risk. So then they should be staying home. They shouldn't be going to shul, and they shouldn't worry about kriyasa tefillah b'tziv, and shouldn't worry about kriyasa Torah. And that is an important thing to be mechanech people. When a pregnant woman calls up, and the doctor got her nervous, and with lots of yeshiva das, not being dismissive in any way, but lots of yeshiva das, you discuss it with her, discuss it with the doctor, and you come to the position that she should fast on Yom Kippur, and then you have to be mechanech her to say that she has to stay at home, and has to stay in bed, and has to be, and if it's warm, put the air conditioner, keep the air conditioner on for Erev Yom Tov, and her husband has to leave home, has to leave shul and check in on her, and that, you have to mechanech a person to say that it's better than to be at home in bed than being in shul. So that is often hard for a person in Makabel, not to be in shul for Kol Nidri, for Ne'ilah, for San Tokev. How could that be? They have to mechanech a person. That's what the Chasam Sofer says. There's a Dover Poshut Ad Moed. And Rabbi Neuwirth points out, even if it means that the husband has to stay home. Now, let's say there are five kids at home, and the woman is pregnant, and she's going to be very schwach. So one has to get the woman help. You can't tell a woman with five kids stay in bed the whole day. So she has to have to get her help. And even with help, she's going to be hard for her. So if never right, so it's more important for the husband to be home and miss Kriyas HaTorah and miss Tefillah B'Tzibur in order that his wife will be able to stay in bed and be able to fast. Now the question is, yeah. Those are the facts. Those are the facts. In other words, yeah. If that's the only way that if you have a chaver, and the only way that chaver will fast on Yom Kippur is if you spend Yom Kippur with him.
No, not fast. The only way that the woman would agree not to go to shul.
The shaila you're asking is that she'll insist on going to shul, and then she will probably have to break her fast.
No, she won't. She'll just be disakana.
That's also not a good thing. See, and if your choices are, you have several bad choices.
Yeah.
So you have to have several unreasonable choices. So first, the rabbi has to work hard to make things reasonable. But at the end of the day, after he invests himself, he still has an unreasonable person. Unreasonable Jew, we have such a thing, they're called difficult passengers. You have a difficult passenger, and they're giving you unreasonable choices. Either that they'll be b'sakana, or that they'll be that they'll break their fast, or that you have to spend all of Yom Kippur with them. So then, out of the three bad choices, you gotta go with the third one. That's what you have to do. Rav Shlomo Zalman writes even more. Rav Shlomo Zalman writes that let's say a woman is eating shiurim, but if she's home in bed, she'll be able to eat fewer shiurim. She'll eat less, and if she's in shul, she has to break it fast either way. But if she's at home, she'll be able to eat a pachas mikashir once an hour. She's in shul, she has to have a pachas mikashir twice an hour. So Shlomo Zalman said she should be in bed. And Rav Neuvert said, and that's enough reason for the husband also to miss davening and be home with his wife. Again, these things very rarely come up because we have because usually a community has a support system, a network where these things do not necessarily happen. What's the din if one has the choice? Even before we get to that, most of the time when we are concerned about the pregnancy, so my experience has been that most of the time doctors will be comfortable with drinking with shiurim. Alright, let's say a few words about the halach of shiurim. Shiurim is to drink with shiurim is also a, if it's not mutter, it's an isa deraisa. So that's one of the great misconceptions that we're often battling, is that people assume that the shiurim is mutter. Shiurim is a drabonan. No, shiurim is an isa deraisa. It's just we don't have the onesh if it's pachas mikashir. But the heter to drink with shiurim is the same standard as the heter to eat without shiurim. It's just we have a din that when eats pachis mikashir, that hakala kal koidim. That we have a special din in Yom Kippur, which we do not fully understand. A special din in Yom Kippur, hakala kal koidim. That we try to be makel as much as possible. And halacha lemaisa, we would apply probably in other situations as well. So now when it comes to Yom Kippur, so hakala kal means to have pachis mikashir. What is pachis mikashir? So it's a less than a kaiseves and less than a mole lugmav, in an amount of time which is pachos from an achilas pras. So halacha lemaisa, the rabbanim tell me that it means less than an ounce, just under an ounce
liquid.
And the shiurim, the Chassam Sefer writes in the same tshuva, he says anywhere from 9 minutes to 2 minutes. So the Chassam Sefer prefers 9 minutes, the Alter Rebbe prefers 7 minutes, Rosh Hashulchan has 6 minutes, and Yitzchok Chanan had 5 minutes. So halacha lemaase, if you have an ounce even every 9 minutes, so that is 6 ounces over the course of an hour. That's a full glass in every hour. So the course from 9 to 12, it's already 18 ounces. So doctors often will be very comfortable with the person drinking shiurim, that they think that's enough hydration if they begin early on in the day. Person sleeps till 11 o'clock, so then they may not be able to use shiurim. If they begin early in the day, that means that they begin 8 o'clock in the morning. So within several hours, they have a significant amount of they have a significant amount of liquid, and the shiurim for solid and for liquid are not mitzdarif. So we can have separate. We have at the same time small amounts of fruit and small amounts of liquid. Chassam Sefer writes as a chiddush that if you can have hanos me'ayim and not hanos gorin as preferred. So Chassam Sefer has a preference if it can be a clear liquid, so that is preferable. That's a chiddush. Very often that is not preferable. Very often a doctor will say that she can do shiurim, but he wants the liquid to have some kind of caloric contribution. So he definitely wants orange juice, wants Gatorade, wants some kind of so then obviously that's what we do. But if the doctor says no, Kli liquid is good enough, so then that was the preference of the Chassam Sofer, to have clear liquid pachas mikashir every 9 minutes. Question comes up, what happens if the doctor says that she can either, and this is bestam by a choyla, lav davka praying the woman, but any choyla, can, if they want, they can start at 8 o'clock in the morning and have pachas mikashir, or they can wait till 4 o'clock in the afternoon, so they have they fast until 4 o'clock, but then at 4 o'clock, they're going to have to drink kashir. So what? How do we pass it in that case? So I saw in many svarim, I think Rav Aldenburg has this, I think Shlomo Zalman has this, that it all depends on the on what the doctor says. If the doctor says that this woman for sure has to hydrate, she cannot fast the entire day, has to happen, she has to drink something, so then it's better to start at 8 o'clock in the morning, shiurim the entire day, rather than fast entirely until 4 o'clock. On the other hand, if the doctor says, maybe she'll make it, I don't know. If I'm a betting man, she'll have to break her fast. But there's a chance. She stays in bed the entire day, she's fully resting, she has an air conditioner going on, and she's able to rest, and maybe she can make it the entire day. On the other hand, if she begins to get cramping, she begins to get dizzy, she begins to have a strong amber urine, she has to break her fast. So then we go for it. Then we try, then we say, no, we'll wait till, try not to break the fast at all. And if she has to break her fast, so then she has to break with, she has to load up on the liquids rather than do pachis mikashir. I came across Shmi Yechidosh, that Rav Avram writes that if a woman conceived via IVF, right, that's in vitro, right, that means that Rachman al-Islam, they had trouble having children, and then they tried various forms of not so invasive fertility treatments, and they daven, so Kadosh Baruch Hu determined that they have to become pregnant via by extracting the egg from the ovary and taking the zera from the semen and then putting it together in the lab, and then the embryo gets placed back inside the mother, so it's the entire materials from father and mother, but the conception or the fertilization took place outside of the body. So he writes that during the first few weeks of pregnancy, an IVF pregnancy is at greater risk than a normal pregnancy. Ad kenekach that Rav Sofer Avram writes, Dr. Abram writes, that Rav Shlomo Zalman was makel on a mother and a pregnant woman who conceived via IVF during the first few weeks. It does not say how many weeks. I have to find out from the doctors. But that a woman should eat lechanchila or should drink lechanchila with shiurim, which we would not say for a regular pregnancy. We do say that we do not distinguish between the different parts of a pregnancy. At the very, very beginning of a pregnancy, that's what the Shevet HaLevi has this, Rav Vosner has in Chelek Zayin, the very beginning of a pregnancy. So we also have to give the full legitimacy, the full rights of a pregnant woman, even though we say that the first 40 days is Maya Baalma, but she's a pregnant woman, and we would, this is a tshuva by Yitzchok Chanan also, with Mechal Shabbos, it's a discussion amongst the poskim. So Machlek is a poskim, with the Mechal Shabbos for a very, very early pregnancy. But Lemaisa, we paskin that we are Mechal Shabbos, Lanias Daiti, I think we paskin that way. And we would paskin Lanias Daiti and Yom Kippur as well, that if for some reason a very early pregnancy is challenged, then we would also give it the same rights as a later pregnancy. The Chiddush we're saying over here is that Rabbi Shlomo Zalman apparently said that a normal IVF pregnancy is to be considered as a challenged pregnancy during the first few weeks. There is a comment in the Shaar HaTzion that the Chafetz Chaim quotes of Yaakov Emden as saying, this I think is in Hilchos Tisha B'Av, that an early pregnancy is more masukin, is more precarious than a later point in the pregnancy, and therefore one should be more concerned, and that would cause that would give us reason to again look at staining early pregnancy. Even though I said before that staining early pregnancy is not considered to be a danger sign, nevertheless, if a doctor is concerned about the staining and she's actively staining on Yom Kippur, even though it's an early pregnancy, that would be a reason to have a very serious discussion with the doctor whether this woman is at a greater risk of hapola, even though we know that the bleeding is coming from a different source. Again, I have to leave it up to the gynecologist to make a call on that one. So that's the any questions about pregnancy? It's not an easy discussion, especially if a woman, something's very difficult. A woman has been trying to get pregnant for a long time, especially she got pregnant, and then she's nervous over Yom Kippur. These are very difficult conversations. Very difficult. It's very difficult. It requires a lot of yeshiva das, and it's. I often have, before Yom Kippur, I will often have conversations with other gynecologists, with mumchim, in order to run by whether I chapped it correctly, whether I got it right, whether there really is an additional sakon over here, or whether I can feel comfortable saying that she has to fast, and of course, running it by my rebbeim, Rav Shechtem, Rav Ulig, to evaluate things, because it's either way, it's a weighty, it's a very weighty decision to make. Yeah. Yeah, so I would say you only got six. Okay, sorry. If she had two hapalot before, number two, if she has had preterm labor, number three, if she's had in this pregnancy cramping, number four, if she's had in this pregnancy staining. All right. Then number five is now on Yom Kippur, if she's going to any form of dehydration. Number six, if on Yom Kippur she has cramping. Number seven, if on Yom Kippur the movement of the baby changes. And number eight is if she has any signs of any signs of going into labor. If the water breaks, if she has real cramping. And I didn't tell you number nine, you're right. Right, didn't do number nine, correct, sorry. Number nine is the following situation. It's a new shaila, so to speak. There are situations where doctors say that they want to be in control of the labor. Right? And let's say a woman has a very weak uterus. Let's say a woman has had. Sometimes a woman can have an unusually shaped uterus. So doctors will say, we don't want this woman to go into labor. We want to bring her into labor. We were going to take her in the 39th week, and then we're going to give her medication, and she'll begin her labor in the hospital, be watching everything. And the reasons for this is because, again, let's say the baby has some kind of stress. Let's say the mother has some kind of infection. But more likely could be because they don't want to put too much pressure on the uterus. They don't want it to be natural, normal labor. So then that's a very serious child. I can't say anything definite about that. In other words, so the doctor will say, I'm nervous that she's in her 39th week. And if she goes into labor because she's fasting, the baby will be fine. The lungs are fully developed. However, I'm nervous. I want to be able to. I don't want her to go into labor. I want to control the labor. So tzarachian, I'm not sure. You have to sit down with the doctors and discuss. Lanius daiti, if that the doctors say that the woman could become a choyle mesukan because the uterus could tear if she goes into labor. if she's at the end of pregnancy, we would tell her not to fast. Now again, it's going to be a very difficult shear. The doctor, was it, do we start when it's in the 37th week, 38th week? I'm not sure. It has to be tzorach ledun with the doctors. Good, thank you very much. I would have and that's like a newer kind of a shaila, because this is just coming up as doctors have greater expertise, so these shailas come up. Good, so let's go on. Go ahead.
With the sign of dehydration on Yom Kippur, how should the woman break her fast? The shiurim or
the tzav? So, it's a good question. I would say the laniyas daiti. Okay, this is more of a medical question. But laniyas daiti, in absence of medical information, you can't, you don't have a doctor right next to you. So I would say that if, and this is information I got from doctors, that if she is, if it's dizziness or faintness, so then she should, the earliest sign of dizziness or faintness, what she does is she sits down and sees it goes away. Let's say she's lying down. She becomes dizzy or faint, then she has to break her fast, try with shiur. And I would say try every 9 minutes. If in three goes, it doesn't go, go down to every 6 minutes. If it doesn't go, then they go into 4 minutes, and then if it doesn't go, then just drink. Right? Now, if she went to the bathroom, she came dizzy or faint, so that could be because she changed her position. So then she should sit down and see if it goes away. If it doesn't go away, then she has to break her fast. Let's say she has, as Rabbi Schwartz is saying, that she knows that her urine has changed to be, just a starkly different color. So then I'm not sure. My thinking would be also to try with urine first. On the other hand, if she really is very schwach, she just is, she begins to feel heart palpitations. That also signs dehydration. The heart starts moving very quickly. So then I would say she should just drink to abandon. If she's beginning to get to feel that stiffness in one of her limbs, so then Lani's diet, she should just drink to abandon. That's what I would think. But again, it would be better to get an input of a doctor in these things.
A woman who had two miscarriages, but the doctor said she could fast normally. Should the rope be more mocking than the doctor?
Yeah, those are nerve-wracking situations. I'll tell you what, I have had situations where a woman had fainted several times during pregnancy. So I thought there's no way she should fast. And the doctor felt that if she's lying down and all of Yom Kippur, that we can take a chance on it. So I was very nervous about that. So what I try to do is we should say the same things, not to go against the doctor. But Lania's daiti, if the doctor is, the doctor says that there is no indication from the previous pregnancies that she'll go into early labor this time, and it has to be a roifei mumcha. I would consult with several doctors, and if they all agree, then I guess I would let her fast. I would be very nervous of Yom Kippur, but I would let her fast. But if probably would happen in that case is that if you run it by three mumchim, three really good doctors, probably that they will not agree on that, and that's and probably then one would end up telling her to break her fast, probably. What about a nursing mother? So the nursing mother, we have the following concerns. We're concerned that the mother is putting out more liquids, and therefore she is at a greater danger of dehydration, greater risk of dehydration, and we're afraid that the baby is not going to get enough to drink, and therefore the baby is at a risk of dehydration. So after the baby is already 6 months old, the baby's usually eating other things, so then we are not so concerned with the baby and will be able to supplement. But before 6 months, when the baby is only drinking from the mother, so again, if the baby is taking formula, so then that's not really much of a shaila. She'll do what she can do, and the baby will have the formula, and probably they'll both be make it through the day without any problem. But let's say the baby is only taking the mother, doesn't take formula. So then we would still start them both off as fasting, and we would we would tell the mother to try if the baby becomes frustrated at some point. If the mother becomes schwach, so she'll use the regular signs of dehydration, then she has to break her fast. If the baby is becoming very frustrated because the baby's not getting enough to drink, so then we would push the baby to try to take the formula this time. Maybe have a siyata d'shmaya that the baby will take it. Try to nurse the baby along a little bit and see if the baby. But if it's and if so then you have to use your seichel. If it's half an hour before the end of the fast, the mother's great, but the baby's aggravated, so then probably the baby will be fine. But if it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and you already have tried giving the baby all sorts of, the baby's very frustrated, very upset. The baby hasn't had a good nursing since first thing in the morning. The baby's not taking anything else, not taking the bottle. So then the mother's going to have to break her fast in order that the baby should be able to drink and make it through the fast. Parents will sometimes say that we, in principle, do not give our children formula. So laniyas daiti, that is not a reason to break one's fast in Yom Kippur. The doctors say it's fine. And even if a doctor feels absolutely that a kid should should nurse from the mother, which is correct. That's the way the biological design nature. The baby should nurse from the mother. The mother should do everything to nurse the baby, and the medicine seems to indicate that that's the best thing. However, I think it'd be very hard pressed to find anybody who would say that if one day in Yom Kippur the baby has a bottle, two bottles, that's going to impact on the baby. So then you have to, that's an unreasonable person. And the rabbi, I think, has to insist that they cave in on this one day.
What about at the beginning of pregnancy when you're trying to
get that? Hold the question for 1 second. There is, however, a chazanish. The chazanish is quoted as saying that since the Gemara says, Shinui me'ayim, or stam tinek musukun etzel cholov, so therefore the Chazanish is quoted as saying that to force a baby to take a different kind of nutrition is a sakana for the baby, that therefore in the situation that I described the parents are not mechuyev to push the baby to take the formula. So the Chazanish is quoted as saying that, I believe in the footnotes of the Shmira Shabbos he quotes the Chazanish. But Laniya's diet is very hard to be, and if one is in a difficult situation, so it's an obvious an Ilan Godol Smaichalov. However, as in a general approach, I would think that one should not be Samech on this Mesorah for several reasons. Number one is I'm not convinced that this is an accurate Mesorah from the Chazanish. Because it's based on the Gemara of Stam Tinik Musuku Nesul Cholov, and therefore one's allowed to give the baby Cholov Tomei. So the Chazanish is Medayik, well, why are we giving the baby Cholov Tomei? Why don't we give the baby something else to eat? So the Chazanish said, oh, you see, that Shinim Me'ayim L'gabe, the baby is a Sakana, and that's why we can definitely give Cholov Tomei. That may not be the case. It could be that they tried other things. It's a very strange. It's an ekimta, which is not mukharach in the Gemara to be makel. That's why I have serious doubts as to whether the Chazanish really said this. And the Reb Zilberstein, who is a bnei braker, he's close to the school of the Chazanish. Reb Zilberstein is the brother-in-law of Rav Chaim Kanievsky, son-in-law of Rav Yoshev. So he writes that even the Chazanish only said it for a baby that was very sensitive and that does not digest milk well, and that's what the Chazanish meant. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank is chaylik very clearly. He says, and that is that that the Chazanish's diuk in the Gemara is against the Rashi. The Rashi says it's referring to a tinik that's musukan already, not that it's a stam tinik that's pesakon already. And Chavetz Chaim already said, well, obviously it was long before the Chazanish, but the Beir Halacha writes that we could only be Mako for the sake of the baby maintaining his diet if the baby was B'sakhan already. So again, to be Samech and the Chazanish, I have I'm very, very nervous about that. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
The
mother might lose the milk.
No, I'm thinking more, if the baby is not taken to nursing well, and finally the mother got the baby to nurse.
Yeah.
Now to switch to the bottle after a short time may make the baby...
You're right, so a good question. Lanias daiti, that would not be your reason. If it's a situation where there are situations with preterm babies where doctors have said that it is essential for the baby to get mother's milk. So if it's a preterm baby that is having trouble nursing, and we finally got the baby to nurse, and the doctors say, number one, that this baby will be besakona if it doesn't have the mother's milk, and this baby is at risk for never nursing, and you really speak to the doctors, and they really mean it, and they understand it, and it's based on science, so then we don't have to make a luchara. I would have two however's. Number one is that you have to really make sure the doctors, because I've had a situation where doctors are magzim on the importance of this particular baby having milk for this, on Shabbos situations, where they wanted the mother to express milk over Shabbos into a bottle for a baby in the NICU. And the doctors were totally terribly magzim on the need, that they drove the mother crazy. In the end, the mother was a kimpeter. She'd just given birth, and the doctors drove the mother so crazy that I was nervous with her. So I was makel for the mother to do a biderach shini because of the mother's health. She was going. But when I spoke to the doctors, they were terribly mugs, and they admitted to it in the end. So that's why you have to really press the doctors on this, because sometimes they get very taken unnecessarily so. However, there is a very real concern that if a woman does if a nursing mother fasts, that she may lose her milk supply and may not be able to get it back. That is documented as having happened. It's not a great. So again, Lania's daiti, that given nowadays that in a normal situation, so I would say Lania's daiti, and maybe others would be chelik, but that would still be a sacrifice one has to make for Yom Kippur, right? If it's a normal situation, normal healthy baby, normal mother, so she may end up not being able to nurse. So nowadays, where there are so many other there are other options, this formula which usually works. So I would think that is a risk that a mother has to accept in order to fast Yom Kippur. Having said that, if it's a precarious situation, so then have to shots up each situation on its own.
If it works, it doesn't always work.
Did that one answer this gentleman's question? Because here, when you express milk before, the baby's going to take it from a bottle. So if the baby's having trouble latching on, so getting it from a bottle, even the mother's milk.
No, I just meant, why would we have to say,
the mother may not have stored up a full day's worth of milk. Doesn't always happen. Could have twins. So it's, there could be many say, it could be the mother wasn't feeling well for a few days already, so you already used up the supply. Happens, sure.
Just the concern for a mother losing her milk, that's for the baby only 6 months and over?
I think if a mother in the early nursing period, so if a woman dehydrates and doesn't have milk for a day, so she may never get the milk supply back again. That can happen. That is a real risk. Even before this, it's Landia's daiti, now that we have formula, so I would think that is a risk the woman has to accept. But maybe others would disagree, I don't know.
Early on, the first 5 weeks before the baby's immune system starts, there is definitely medicinal benefits to the mother's breast milk, because it gives, for the immune system specifically, of the baby.
Right, but that double suffix number one is when the mother will actually lose the milk and not get it back, because the number is not. And number two is that there was an entire generation, if not two generations, that did have formula, so it's very hard to be makel. And that I think what you're saying is correct, And the shaila is only a shaila in a situation where a mother is a dedicated nurser, right? But let's say she wants to, you know, often the shaila is a non-starter, because often in order to go out the night, she'll give the baby from her for two bottles, right? So if she's that's really you have to ask. If you and your husband are going out Sunday afternoon, and the baby needs two bottles, you're going to give her two bottles? Of course, Rabbi. That's so. Of course, you're not going to be more making Yom Kippur. But what you're saying is correct. And again, it could be that the science will the numbers will come in strongly and change the way we look at things. But Lani's idea, that's the way that we would look at things still nowadays. If a woman is a Yeledes, so that's Mefurish and Shulchan Aruch, that this will have to finish up. Yeah, the thing I found interesting is the Chassam Sofer, when he discusses Hanos Gorin, he says you should have tea or coffee. I think he says that even tea is not considered, he doesn't consider that considered to be a taste, anything that's tasty. That was a suggestion that if a person has to have some kind of liquid. Generally speaking, the poskim assume that taking a pill alone is not achilah yom kippur. Taking a pill, so there is a din of refuah. If a person needs to have a pill, so Rav Moshe writes that it's not a ma'is achila, that it's if a person needs it, it should be mutter. If a person, however, that's without any water, Rav Moshe's meikel, that if without water, chola she'ein basakona, can have a pill. And some of the Israeli posts can point out that one thing to consider, if a person has to have a pill and needs some water, to make the water a poor tasting water, to make it, to cook some herbs, or to make it something that's not comfortable to taste, to find a non-toxic mouthwash and put a few drops. It doesn't have to taste terrible, it doesn't have to be putrid, it just has to be uncomfortable. So that would be an eitzah for a person who needs to have a pill and who needs to have some water with it, and that that it would be certainly shalei kederach. Okay, very quickly, a yeledes, a woman who's given birth. So then for the first 3 days, she does not fast. And after the third day till the seventh day, then it depends if she feels that she needs to fast. And after the seventh day, she's kechol like any other person. Now for the first 3 days, there's a machlokas of poskim whether that is measured as 3 full days, meisle, 72 hours, or whether it's miktas yom kukulai. So the Mishneh Berurah is, even the Shulchan Aruch is interesting. The Shulchan Aruch says it means that if Shabbos is the third day, so then she should already stop. Then she already cannot has to. She can only she can only eat if she feels she needs to eat. And the Mishneh Berurah is makel against the Shulchan Aruch and says, no, we should work with the 72 hours. So the question comes up, what happens if the 72nd hour is on Yom Kippur? Right, according to Mishneh Berurah, she is in her first 3 days till the morning of Yom Kippur. So the Pashas would be, let's say, so the Mishneh Berurah in that case is, no, in that case I'll be Machmel Shulchan Aruch. That's why I'm not going to go. That she can just start fasting the middle of Yom Kippur. But Bishlomo Zalman Arbach says that the one should consider, Shmuel Shabbos quotes, and can consider that she would be able to eat till the middle of Yom Kippur, and then after that it would be usur for her to eat.
And this is not with Shurim,
this is just this, I believe. Well, if Shurim would be enough to do it, then she should do it with Shurim, yeah. Shlomo Zalman argues with Mishneh Berurah on this other, on the second Nakuda, yeah, correct.
If my wife's
Yeah, let's say a woman gives birth. Let's say this year Yom Kippur is on Shabbos. So the woman gave birth on Thursday afternoon. Wednesday afternoon, right? So Wednesday afternoon is day one according to Shulchan Aruch. Thursday is day two. Friday is day three. She has to fast. And the Mishnah Berurah says that since it's a machlokes rishonim, it says no, she only has 72 hours when she's into Yom Kippur, right? So then at that point, that's when the Mishnah Berurah would say that she has that she should be mekel. All right. Now let's say it turns out that the 72nd hour is over. Let's say Kol Nidrei night. So then the Mishnah Berurah is machmir in that. Okay, I want to catch my downstairs. I have to stop.